terms of the wine, that's just been a passion of mine for, I don't know, 7, 8 years since I left college. And I've been able to be fortunate enough to be in Oregon, to be so close to the Chehalem Mountains, to be so close to the Willamette Valley, that it just, everything kind of fell into place naturally. I'm thankful to now have McCollum Heritage 91 in partnership with Palisade.
That's how success happens. From Entrepreneur Magazine, my name is Robert Tuckman. I self-funded, built up, and eventually sold two businesses to major players in the sports and entertainment industry. And I am fascinated by other entrepreneurial minds and what drives high-achieving people. So on this podcast, we're going to learn what they've learned and what it takes to really succeed. From his life on the basketball court to his work in the community, leaving a legacy has always been important to CJ McCollum. And his new wine company, Heritage 91, represents just one more chapter in that legacy. His business launched this year, and he had to keep on top of it from a bubble in Orlando. It was another obstacle that CJ overcame. But obstacles have always been just bumps in the road for CJ. Even though CJ is now a legitimate star in the NBA, it wasn't always that way. But he was always willing to work harder than the others and overcome bumps, and that is how he succeeded. He was selected by Portland with the 10th overall pick in the 2013 NBA draft, and he was a reserve in his first 2 years. That is, until he became a full-time starter for the Trailblazers in his third season. The rest is history for CJ's NBA story. But basketball, it's just part of CJ's story. See, CJ is heavily involved in his community as a podcast host and philanthropist. In 2016, he opened up the CJ McCollum Dream Center, which is an innovative learning room at the Blazers Boys and Girls Club. He also helps foster local youths interested in journalists through an initiative called CJ's Press Pass. It grants aspiring journalists access to post-game news conferences and provides them the opportunity to attend events with CJ himself. It was super surreal interviewing CJ last month from the NBA bubble in Orlando. He was actually one of the first interviews I've done for How Success Happens who actually showed up 5 minutes early. He told me he hosts a podcast himself, which of course I knew, and he understands the need to be on time for the production. It was all I needed to hear to understand why CJ McCollum has already been so successful. Of course, I did have to start by asking him what it was like to live in that bubble.
It's different. It takes a lot of getting used to how you move around. Obviously, we've all been in isolation for quite some time, so we've been restricted to our homes, probably grocery stores, occasional takeout food and walks, depending on if you have animals or not. Yeah. But now you run into, depending on what hotel you're in, you got about 6, 7, 8 teams. So you're seeing everybody, but everybody's obviously wearing masks. There's hand sanitizer stations everywhere. We have these scanning devices that we use to access buildings, basically every building you want to go in and out of. And if you've done your protocol, you've gone through the process of testing and you've registered negatives consistently and you've done your daily, you got your thermometer.
Oh my God.
And you have your daily, this little concoction of a machine that gives you a breakdown of stuff. You have to plug that in every morning. And once you've done that, it'll show green. You scan in, but if you haven't completed that, it'll give you another color like blue or red, which means you can't proceed and security will stop you.
Yeah, it's amazing, man. When you got a lot of money at stake, what people will do to make sure you get the product out there. But like, what's that like to just, it's kind of funny because you could have a tiff with the dude on the court and then you're off to the next city, right? Now you see him in like the cafeteria, I would assume. Is that been kind of something you got to get used to too?
You definitely have to get used to seeing everybody, especially when we start playing. They split up the hotels pretty well. So I haven't seen many players from Memphis. I think New Orleans is in our hotel, but a lot of the teams you play against probably aren't in your hotel right away, but it will be kind of awkward. But at the same time, we're all competing.
And
you can kind of separate playing on the court when you're running the people in the hallways or in the players' lounge.
So tell me, it's not often when I get on a podcast and talk to someone who's probably taped more podcast episodes than me as a host. And I know you have this great podcast. You started it. I know you're, I think, 80 episodes or more deep on it. But tell me, how did you, coming from, you're playing in the NBA, I know you studied journalism in school at Lehigh, but how did you get involved in doing your own podcast?
Yeah, so they actually pitched it to me some years ago. When I first got into the league, I was getting pitched on podcasts, but I hadn't established myself, and I felt like I was heading down the wrong path as a professional athlete when you're known more for what you do in the journalism world than what you do on the court. That was heard early on. I hadn't really established myself, so I kind of shied away from it and erred on the side of just doing radio and doing a daily diary. But as I kind of established myself and I signed my first extension, it was pitched to me again. And I just kind of figured out, first and foremost, what I want to talk about, who will be my co-host, and how many episodes I would do. And we've taken a hiatus since the coronavirus actually struck. But I think I had recorded 107 episodes of that on a 2-year deal. And it was a lot of fun, first and foremost, interviewing so many different guests. One of the reasons why I made sure I was on time is because that's one of my pet peeves.
I appreciate it, man, because you're probably the first guy who's actually early when I'm interviewing people. And I read a lot about you and said, like, even I heard, like, which made me feel very bad about myself, was that you actually go and break down film or audio and video yourself from your podcast so you can get better, which I know you're doing basketball, which is great, but is that true?
There's some truth to it.
All right.
I won't say that I consistently do that, but I do re-listen and I pull clips, or I have them pull clips, kind of arrange, you know, what I want to go on social media, what I would like to have taken out. So there is some truth to it. I am capable of doing it, but I won't say that I do it every episode, because it's, as you know, to record the episode alone is time consuming, but to go back and listen to it and edit it and break it down is a whole other level of dedication that I just don't have right now.
So let me ask you, because you've done these other things, playing NBA basketball, full-time job. And I love what you said, like, you wanted to make sure you had it down kind of and everything within the NBA before you expanded. And let me ask you now, because not only are you doing a podcast, but you recently, very recently, I believe, launched a wine brand called Heritage 91. How have you, and I want to talk about the wine, but how have you set yourself up just from a time management standpoint to focus on your day job, so to speak, and then these other initiatives?
It's taken a lot of time for me to kind of figure everything out. Early on in my career, I could just play basketball. I do radio on the side, but that was, you know, my main focus. And as I've gotten older, I've learned to kind of delegate responsibilities to others. I think that's been very helpful. Trusting the people that work for you. I have a great group of people who work for me, and especially my agency. They do a tremendous job of kind of taking my dreams, my aspirations, my goals, some of my demands, and putting them to life. So that's a credit to Ashley. It's a credit to Sam, Excel, and the rest of my agency. I've delegated a lot of responsibility, and they've answered the bell and kind of expanded my portfolio probably better than I could have imagined 7 years ago when I was drafted. But in terms of the rest of it, it's just about picking things. You know, growing up in college, they tell you can have three things. You can focus on academics, focus on athletics, or you can focus on the partying and the girls. And I used to always say that there was a way to have all three.
Exactly.
Figured it out yet. I think as you get older, you realize you have to wake up earlier sometimes, and you have to stay up later. And I get my work in on the court. You know, it's 10. I've been up since 7:30, you know what I mean? Eastern time. So get my work in, I get my reading in, whatever I need to get done. And then I can go about my day. I can still FaceTime my fiance. I can still FaceTime my family and kind of balance it out. But it is hard. It takes a lot of work. It takes a lot of mistakes. Takes a lot of 2 out of 3. Sometimes I'm really great on the court, but my podcast isn't going well and my relationship's going well. And sometimes it's kind of shifting and changing because you have to figure out how to balance all three. But I think as I get closer to 30, I figured out, get your sleep, try to wake up early when you can, and just kind of utilize your 24 hours the best way you know how. And then in terms of the wine, that's just been a passion of mine for, I don't know, 7, 8 years since I left college. And I've been able to be fortunate enough to be in Oregon, to be so close to the Chehalem Mountains, to be so close to the Willamette Valley, that it just, everything kind of fell into place naturally. I'm thankful to now have McCollum Heritage 91 in partnership with Paddleside.
And how'd you get into wine? What was it that got you into it? And obviously being in Portland, but was this something you were into prior? Because most young guys, like, I don't even remember what I'm drinking, like at 20 years old. It was in wine. I'll tell you that. It was some knockoff of like Jack Daniels. But like, how did you get into it? Like, what was that gave you your passion for wine?
I think it was just my thirst and my hunger. But just like you, I wasn't a wine guy. I went through college. I never drank beer, but I drank the other strong stuff. So I kind of evolved. And actually, when I met my now fiance, she introduced me to wine. I didn't really like it at the time. And it kind of grew on me. Obviously, I was drinking cheap stuff. I was drinking things that probably wouldn't taste as good anyway, but I didn't know any better. And as I got older, I moved to Oregon. I started trying wine. I try Bryant Creek. I tried Walter Scott for the first time. That was my first ever Oregon Pinot from Bryant Creek. And I was like, wow, this is pretty good. I don't know if I'm just maturing at this point.
This is actually good.
And then I progressed and began to go to wineries. I think the first winery I went to was Stoller. And then from there, it kind of expanded, kind of pushed my curiosity to where I wanted to learn more about it. I wanted to learn about volcanic soil because for some reason I gravitated towards that. I want to learn about the grapes. How long should it be in the barrel? What's the process like? Can you make money off of it? Is it profitable? Is this something that I just want to do as a hobby and taste, or do I want to actually own a vineyard? And I kind of expanded from there and just really took advantage of my resources and really took advantage of being in such a tremendous place that it was 20-minute drive, 30-minute drive, 40-minute drive. Now I'm a member at 6, 7. I have tons of wine now.
It's a lot of wine. So how did that process, which is incredible, because it sounds like to me you're someone that does their due diligence, right? And I know you probably honed your skills. I know you, even in college, were a journalism major and did a lot of reporting, and I'm sure you were always prepared. As I know, like you said, you popped on this thing early. But how, doing your due diligence on wine, it sounds like to me you're always someone who is curious to learn more. Is that part of, and I know a lot of great entrepreneurs are very curious. Is that something that has always been innate with you?
Yeah, definitely. I was always very curious. I was the kid that asked 1,000 questions to his parents, especially, why is it like this? Well, I don't understand, but why? But why? But why? And that's kind of how I've continued to expand my knowledge. And the partnership with Adelsheim is huge. And we focus on education. We focus on learning and sustainability. So I've been able to extend my education, not just on Pinots, but all grapes, varietals, how you run a wine business. They've been tremendous. The winemaker, Gina, has been great with breaking things down for me, putting it in layman's terms, because obviously I haven't worked in my entire life. And I think that's the most important thing, figuring out ways to learn in your own lingo, because a lot of people will bring you stuff and it's not your expertise. You don't really know about it. That's like me talking about basketball extensively to someone who's never played basketball
before. Right.
So I think that's been very helpful for me. And then the other thing is just continuing to figure out ways to expand your knowledge, not just from asking questions, but I watch Netflix. I watch all the SOM videos. I'm watching the breakdown of the process of what it takes to study, what it takes to understand. Why do some wines have longer legs than others? What are legs?
Right. I don't know. I'm not a wine guy. But I get it.
Entire process of, do you decant younger wines or older wines? And what type of glasses do you use? Why does Oregon have a Pinot Noir glass? So just, it starts basic and then you kind of expand on it to where now I understand French oak barrels. Now I understand why my wine was in a French oak barrel for 10 months. The alcohol content, all those types of things. Do you destem? Do you stomp the grapes? What is your process like? And why is one more delicate than the other? So that's kind of how I've grown. And like even saying this stuff out loud sounds weird to me because 7, 8 years ago, I would have never.
Yeah, man, like you're throwing off terms. I have no idea, but it sounds good, man. And I know people who drink wine, there's such a passionate community, just knowing people who are sommeliers or just, there's just this really appreciation, I guess, of wine from a lot of people. And it sounds like you got hooked. And then what I love is you found and you built a business off of it. Now, how far along are you within the business and how has it changed? Because now you have to be isolated with how much focus and attention you can give Heritage 91.
It's been great because it's been a collaborative effort to where Adelsheim's done a tremendous job of helping me with the marketing program. I've hired a PR firm who's done a tremendous job of setting up, you know, different avenues and in ways for me to spread the word. But I think the biggest thing that I've been able to take away from this is the education process. I've been able to produce a wine with a great winemaker and a great winery. And I think people will truly enjoy it. So I don't really feel isolated because I still go to other vineyards. I still go to other wineries. I have friends that work in different places who are looking forward to tasting my wine. I look forward to getting their feedback. So I think if anything, it's kind of expanded my portfolio, my profile in the wine business, because now, you know, I have friends in Napa, I have friends in other places who can help me with this process and continue to figure out ways to expand. Obviously, this is a multi-blend right now where I chose 3 different parts of the vineyard, but there's a lot of avenues and directions I could go from here. And I'm just thankful that I was able to get this start. Because even yesterday, I'm having a conversation with JJ. I'm telling him, like, my wine will be here soon. I can't wait for you to try it. Like, telling him about my process of learning about the vineyard, learning about the cost of grapes, learning about the cost of production, everything that goes into designing a bottle. You don't really appreciate it and understand it until you do it. It's kind of like you listen to someone's podcast and then you try to do a podcast. I see now this is completely different than what I expected. My first time going on SportsCenter.
Yeah.
All the time. And then you go on there and the lights hit you in your face and you're like, oh, this is real. this is exactly what I went through in the wine experiment. I think it's turned out great, and I've just learned so much. I'm thankful I was able to go through this process.
But it seems like to me you're a guy who, you know, a lot of people, when the lights go on, they shrink. And just knowing you from your basketball career, it seems like the bigger the stage, the better you got. And like, I'm wondering, like, with business, like, to me, this seems like, although you've done the work, put in the work, like, you have much bigger aspirations than just your own wine brand.
Oh, this is just the beginning. This is the baby steps. This is the crawl, walk, run. And we're getting towards walking now, and I can't wait to sprint. So it's just more so the learning part. Like, as I've said before, I wanted to do a lot of different things in wine, but I didn't know how to do it. So before I invest in anything, before I really put my dollars into it, I put my whole heart, soul, and my mind into it so that I really understand the severity of each outcome, the severity of success and the severity of failure. And I think that's kind of shifted my mentality on how to strategically plan it. Now I understand the process, the growth process. It took me a year and a half, 2 years to put out a bottle of wine. We bottled that in 8. Those grapes were planted in 18. And we're releasing in 2020. So like the turnaround time, like you have a better understanding of everything once you do it. I know how long it takes to try to design a label. I know how long it takes to get a patent. You got to get everything patented. I know how long it takes to set up a website, to link the distribution, because I don't have an alcohol license. I can't sell alcohol. Yeah. So that's where Adelsheim comes in. That's where like the online marketing comes in. And I think the fact that I've been able to go through this process now, I have a clear understanding of what it takes to run a wine business, what type of people you need to have with you in order to execute it, and how I want to expand going forward from one bottle to who knows how many bottles to a potential vineyard to a whole new empire.
Whole portfolio, whole liquor business, which is, and we just had last week, one of the founders of Patron on the podcast, and he sold it for $5.1 billion, man. He owns 70% of it, but it took him 15, 20 years. Like, no one was drinking it. They weren't selling any cases initially. And then obviously it took off, but there's huge opportunities.
More from our guest, but first a word from our sponsors. Small businesses have unique needs. And despite the current uncertainty, one thing that remains unchanged is the importance of having the right people on your team. When your business is ready to make that next hire, LinkedIn Jobs can help by matching your role with qualified candidates so that you can find the right person quickly. I love LinkedIn. It's an incredible active community of professionals with, get this, more than 690 million members worldwide. And I love LinkedIn Jobs because it screens candidates with the hard and soft skills you're looking for. It's got a great, easy-to-use dashboard and incredible application. So when your business is ready to make that next hire, find the right person with LinkedIn Jobs. You can pay what you want and get the first $50 off. Just visit linkedin.com/HSH. Again, that's linkedin.com/HSH to get $50 off your first job post. Terms and conditions apply.
And we're back.
Did anyone help? Like, I know there's been a few guys, Dwayne Wade obviously comes to mind within the wine business, Steph Curry being in probably Northern California. Did any of those guys give you any insight into what it would be like getting into this? Was there anything you learned of value from those guys about doing this?
Absolutely. I talked to Dwayne specifically, with him being my fellow Li-Ning brother and fellow NBA player. So we basically went over tons of questions. I had a list. What was your process like? How did you select your winemaker? What's the breakdown? Like, how did you structure your business? Do you buy the grapes? What's the situation like in all phases, all aspects? And he was very open with me. He let me know like what questions I should be aware of, what I should be asking, what I should be looking for. And when someone goes through it before you and they're generous enough to kind of tell you like the entire process, I could do it again. I wouldn't do this, but I would do this. Like, that stuff was extremely helpful in me making my decision, because he could have easily deterred me and been like, not what you think it is. You know what I mean? Like, you might want to look into X, Y, Z, but he was like, no, you can do this, but you need to make sure you look into this.
Right.
Make sure you ask your winemaker these types of questions. Make sure you actually like the wine. How often can you be there? I was like, it's 30 minutes away. Perfect. You know what I mean? He's making his wine in California. I'm making mine in Oregon, which is down the street. So I can be involved in the entire process as opposed to just having to call and check in. How's this looking? Or can you send me a bottle of this? It's like, no, I'll be there tomorrow at this time.
I guess he's not growing grapes in Miami, so he's got to go out to California. But let me ask you too, just in terms of yourself, like, and it's great to see like how much time and effort you put into this, because I think there's a lot of athletes, celebrities, they just put their name on a brand or they license it. And you know, you've really gotten involved. Are there other areas that you have passions for that in the back of your mind, you're thinking like, hey, maybe these are potential next steps while I'm playing or even after? Any other industries?
That's a tough question. There's just so many things I want to do outside of the wine business. I'm already in real estate. I'm already in tech. I'm really learning more and more about that stuff. But from a philanthropical standpoint,
yeah,
I'm just trying to figure out my next step. I've done a lot of stuff with the Boys and Girls Clubs. I've done a lot of stuff, you know, in education. I really focus on continuing to educate our youth, especially the underserved, underprivileged youth who come from situations like me to where your access is limited. You only see certain things and you only think certain things are possible. So I've really just focused on that. And especially in light of what's happening in the world today, I think education is huge, which is why I've chose to really focus on education, putting education reform on my back so that more kids have more access. That's been my main goal in the CJ McCollum Dream Centers, is to give more kids more access, more exposure. We've provided them with coding, culturally relevant books. We have computers. We have a journalism department/room to where you can do green screen. You can produce your own podcast. You can produce your own radio show. Right. So I just want to continue to expand on that so that the next generation of kids who look like me, come from places like me, have an idea of what success looks like outside of playing a sport.
100%. And I can't agree with you more. It speaks to my heart. I've been involved on the board of an organization called New York Ed in New York City. It's the largest after school, during school. We create sports programming, lifestyle programming, education for 40,000 underprivileged kids in New York City. I got to get you. I mean, I know you're in Portland, but it's an incredible organization because you see so many of these kids, and then you see other kids in the same city have access to tutors, after school programming. And unfortunately, we got some of our budget cut for the summer, but fortunately we got some back. And I was just woken up because it's all about opportunities. I mean, look at yourself, like how hard would it have been for you to do what you're doing now if you didn't have basketball to get you there? And there's so many kids, thousands, hundreds of thousands that don't have it. So I love how, you know, on this show, it's how success happens, how most importantly to you, it seems like you measure success by how many people you're going to actually help, not so much just dollars.
Yeah, exactly. I think the philanthropy comes from your heart. It's just more about impacting others. That's why we've been strategic with our partnerships. We've been strategic with our experiences, you know, giving kids experiences, giving families experiences, you know, whether that's Make-A-Wish, whether that's Christmas, whether that's providing tickets. I try to do as many things as possible because when I was a kid, I wasn't able to experience a lot of things, but I was fortunate enough to have more than some of my peers, some of my kids in the neighborhood, my friends. So
yeah.
I want to just continue to try to give experiences, to give them light, give them education so that they truly understand. Because I think a lot of times as a kid, my first time going to the West Coast, I was a junior in college.
Yeah, you know, it's amazing.
When you hear of Portland and you're from Ohio, you think of Portland, Maine.
Yeah, yeah, it's true.
Oregon. So that was my mindset. And I'm a kid who was exposed to a lot. I played AAU, I traveled, but it's just a different mentality and mindset. So I want the kids to really see that there's just so many job opportunities out there. So we do press. I have a press pass group where we educate the kids on journalism. We show them what it's like to be a journalist from all phases, behind the camera, in front of the camera, the production side. They come to a game, they can ask as many questions as they want. And we provide them with job opportunities to make money, which is hard to do in journalism. I'm sure you've experienced it. I've experienced it interning. Like it's hard depending on what level you're at. So we've been able to get kids in high school chances to cover games, high school, collegiate, professional, and to get paid for it while being able to get free tutoring, free editing on all papers outside of even what they're doing with the actual journalism.
Yeah, that is so awesome because I think when you're talking about a lot of these kids who are underprivileged, come from undeserved areas, really what it's about is opportunity. And like you see now, like you go into big agency or big company and the interns are being handed out to the guy whose son or friend and son, and these kids, and it's amazing because with New York Edge here in New York City, these kids live in New York City. They walk by these huge buildings with huge businesses and they have no idea what is going on inside, what it looks like and how to get into there. And for us and what we've always tried to do is provide that access to things like internships. And we've got a lot of companies behind us now doing these projects with us and internships like Verizon and But it's so great and warms my heart to hear that that's kind of what your focus is. And are you implementing a lot of that into your brands? Like, is Heritage 91 have some, is there a program for it within some of the charity work you're doing?
Yeah, there'll be a charitable component with it in terms of donating bottles and then auctioning off bottles that'll go to Boys and Girls Club and a lot of my partnerships, like Parent Initiative, SMART, which is Start Making a Reader Today. So we have a lot of single parent initiative, a lot of different strategic partnerships based on, you know, my upbringing, based on some of the stuff I went through. I was raised by a single mom. So I understand some of the factors that may play, although my dad lived 8 minutes away and I see him almost every day. I still know what it's like to go through some of those things that a lot of kids go through. So we're strategically planning it and looking forward to generating some money. And there's some other ways we're going to also strategically gift not only money, but bottles in an auction form so that kids can benefit.
That's amazing. And I know just quickly in the time we have left, I don't know if you saw, there's a company actually, which is kind of interesting. I was thinking of you, called Wink Wines, and they just signed a deal with the Philadelphia Eagles. They're like a digital consumer, really good wine brand. And they signed a deal with the Eagles. They just released kind of a, called Broad and Pattison. It's a wine just for kind of Eagle fans. Have you thought about potentially doing that maybe with Trailblazer fans? Or I'm sure they're big Portland Trailblazer fans probably know their wine.
They do. And one of the things we're working on in the future, obviously our quantity is not high right now because it's more so exclusivity. Wanted people to really get a chance to experience it, to understand it, and then we'll expand later on. But when our quantity gets a little higher, I pick some of my favorite restaurants that we'll make sure are taken care of. But potentially, stadiums, you might see it one day.
Yeah.
Oregon, but we gotta get our quantity up because right now we're looking at an early exit in terms of sales. You know, being so low at 130 cases, we'll probably sell out in 24 to 72 hours.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I'm sure you're gonna have to be producing a lot more. And last thing I gotta ask you, I know you're a kid from Canton, Ohio, and I read you're a Cleveland Browns fan. Is that true, man? Are you a long suffering Browns fan? How are they gonna do this year?
I am. I'm a long suffering Browns fan. Importance of patience. I've been able to deal with losses. Sundays have been tough for years. Draft day is a highlight. Bye week's been a highlight. But I'm looking forward to, hopefully there's a season this year, but obviously say first. But if there is, I think that this year of turmoil, turnover, additions, extensions, good health, I think this is the year Baker turns it up. He's maturing. He's kind of figuring out how to run the team by himself. He's got a head coach now. He's got an offensive coordinator who he knows is going to be there. He has one of the best running backs in the world. He has a defense now. Got to continue to shore up the O-line. But from the weapons standpoint, he has all the weapons. Yeah. He's got OBJ. He's got Juice. He's got tight ends. So there's no excuses this year for our Browns. I'm hoping there is a season we can go 9-7 sneaking as a wild card. And I roll the dice from there.
Yeah, no, man, I love it. That's pretty good. And now I only laugh because I'm a Jets fan, a Jets fan for 40 plus years. So I know that misery and that feeling on Sunday night after losses and like just draft day being like the big hope. And it's great to see, like, as you as a professional athlete, NBA player, superstar, and you got your Browns and you got your scouting report, and it still means something to you, it seems like when they win or lose.
Yeah, it definitely affects you. It affects your mood, and you're more excited when they win.
If you're playing
fantasy football and things of that nature, it allows you to watch other games and still like have the rooting interest.
But yeah,
it's been tough. It's the friendly wagers that we have on your teams. It's been a struggle, man, because it's automatic bet, and you're like, are we going to beat the Ravens?
Yeah. And every other guy, I'm sure, is a bandwagon fan. You know, they like the Patriots or the Ravens or whatever. So, you know, but you really have that deep connection. And I really appreciate coming on. I can't wait to see how well Heritage 91 does. And I'm really hoping you have a great season and good luck in the bubble. Good luck this year, man. Hopefully you could win the championship.
No, I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on, and I'll stay as safe as possible. Hope you stay safe as well. Yeah. Appreciate you having me on. Thanks again.
Thanks, CJ. Appreciate it.
And that's our episode. If you like what you heard, please subscribe to How Success Happens wherever you get your podcasts. We come out with a new episode every Wednesday morning, and you don't want to miss it. And if you like to share, please feel free to pass along the show to an entrepreneur friend who could use a boost, and I could always use the subscribers. And do you have ideas for guests? I always love to hear about great entrepreneurs. If you know anyone, shoot me an email at hsh@entrepreneur.com. or on Twitter at Robert Tuchman. That's R-O-B-E-R-T-T-U-C-H-M-A-N. Or even send me a message on LinkedIn. How Success Happens is a production of Entrepreneur Media. Be sure to visit entrepreneur.com for insight on building your business. Or even better yet, subscribe to our magazine. No joke, I found my first job after reading about a company in Entrepreneur Magazine back in the 1990s. It's always been my absolute favorite magazine for entrepreneurs. Thanks for listening and spending some time with me today. Until next time, my name is Robert Tuchman, just a fellow entrepreneur and your host. See you soon.